Welcome to Musically and Technically Speaking, a podcast where music and technology intersect, hosted by Brenda Minch and Carol Broves. Today's podcast is all about educating the musical consumer. Okay, so it's time for another musically and technically speaking. And tonight, Carol and I are going to take a quick look at an article that I found on the net. It's on a blog called Audio Tuts Plus, or Audio Toots Plus. I think they're tutorials, and that might be why it's called Toots. But the article's called The Benefits of Learning to Play Music, and by a guy named Adrian Try. And I just sent it to Carol, and she's had a few seconds to look it over. And we're going to talk a little bit about, the main crux of the article is all about how we have fewer musicians, actual musicians playing instruments now. And it talks a little bit about, you know, the history of how that started to happen and maybe what some of the ramifications are. And Carol, I know we've talked about this before, like how we are seeing the music education, general music education landscape beginning to change.
Yes. Right? We want to be that change. I mean, my goal is for every student to be able to compose. We take pictures and they use Photoshop and do all that. And the next step is to be able to write your own music. And it's not that difficult. I can't tell how many tweets and how many plurks I get. They want to use canned music. That's all they want to look. Where is some free royalty-free music? Well, students can write their own. And I think we as music educators should offer that as part of our classes. This is evident, this article talking about how few kids now play instruments and that they're just consumers and they're not about doers.
Right.
What's your theory on this?
Well, I don't know. I guess I thought it was interesting that, you know, when going over the history, we've talked a little bit about how the advent of, like, the iPod was kind of the beginning of where people became more consumer and less performer-oriented. And he takes it all the way back to, like, the Walkmans and stuff, where it became a phenomenon where your music, instead of being something that you partook of together with an audience, it became something that you put over your own ears so nobody else could hear it and you wouldn't bother anybody else with it, was where things started to change.
Personalized.
Right. And you didn't have to worry so much about putting a concert together for an audience as you did putting a concert together for yourself.
Right, but now what's happening is people are making more and more videos and doing more and more projects that demand them to write and do their own music. Music is such an integral part of all of this that now we've moved to another age where people have to be able to not only make the pictures and make the movies, but also make the music.
Right, right.
And we're still so focused on our performing groups. Not to say those are bad. I'm not. We have those. But we also have to offer, like the art department offers people that can go in and learn how to do art. We need to offer for the general population how to do music. Not in the performance end, but more in the writing end. And that's what I see, is that we've still considered to be the music labs to be elite. That it's only for those people that already know how to read music. We don't need to put the general population kid into a lab because they can't use it. We're going to only do it for the kids that perform. And I think we need to change that mentality. We need to change it where everyone should be able to go into a lab and be able to work. I mean, my kids have had a lab for 5 years, and I have them come back. You know, the high school kids come back and go, Mrs. Bros, we missed the lab. These are general population kids. I mean, these are kids that had the lab for 5 years, and now they don't have it. They want to go in and still create. They're not in performing groups, and they don't read music that well, but they still want to create.
Right. Well, and I think part of when we started to stretch over into these elite performing groups is when we started to lose kids. You know, before when we had, you know, everybody in school was in the chorus. It didn't matter if you could sing well or if you could just kind of sing. And he mm-hmm. talks about that in his article. You know, it used to be that everybody made music somehow.
Right.
And you didn't have to feel like, if someone said, do you sing, you didn't have to feel like, yeah, I sing well, before you can say yes. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? It's like saying, can you tap a rhythm?
Right. I was talking to Maud Hickey about that, too. She's a professor at Northwestern. And she said, we almost have destroyed ourselves because, along with trying to make this elite and trying to move and push the envelope to excellence, we have left a lot of people at the bus stop.
Right.
You know, we have, and I think that's where we need to go. We need to look at general population and see that, you know what, we can search these. I mean, at IMEA, remember, I thought it was 20% are in the performing groups. It's now down to 12. The average school has 12% of their kids in performing groups. I mean, it has gone, wasn't it 1950, the high was 50%?
I don't know.
So over the years, the performing groups have gone down and down and down and down. And we still need to have the performing groups, but I think we really need to also focus in on making kids always making music. You know, we've lost that. We've lost that K-8 general music class in school. And I don't mean, please, I don't mean music appreciation where you drop the needle and try to figure out the song. I mean where kids actually create music, not just listen and be a consumer.
Right. And not that there's not... Because I hated music appreciation in college. Hated. I did not enjoy it. I understood why I had to take it. Like, because, you know, I wasn't exposing myself to that music. But, Jeezy Pete, there had to be a better way to do that than just sit, you know, haul us all into a lecture room, 300 of us, and, you know, make us listen to a CD or a record or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I think that part of what, who else did I watch today? I watched Dan Meyer. Do you know him, Carol?
No, I don't.
Okay, he's a teacher. I think he's in, like, California, and he's actually a math teacher, but he's been redoing his math, the way he teaches math, and he did a presentation at an open source convention here where coding people were at, because part of what he's doing is he's totally chucking his math book, and he's doing all of his math book, all of his math stuff. He's leaving it available online for other teachers to use. He's using like really great visuals. Like he bought 15 different kinds of glasses of all different shapes and sizes, and he's got a can of soda, and he wants to know how far up on the glass the soda will go. And he's put a measuring stick in the picture, and the kids have – that's all he does, is he slaps the picture up on the board and says, how far will it go? He doesn't give them – you know how in math it's usually outlined – here's the things you need to know. Right. Here's some questions to get you there. And what he was emphasizing in his presentation was what he's learned in his 5 years of teaching is that to be a good teacher, what you need to do is be less helpful.
Right. Get out of the way of learning. That's my thing.
Yeah.
You need to get out of the way of learning.
Don't give them all the steps. Let them figure out some of the steps. Let them figure out what information they need to gather. And I think in music, that is true too. You know, so often, like in our performing groups, as a director, we spend so much time doing this score study or, you know, analyzing what's going on. And then you walk up in front of the group and you say, okay, we need to get louder here. We need to get softer here. We need a T there. We need a D there, whatever. But you don't give the student a chance to kind of formulate why that should be in the song and how it fits together. And I think the same thing applies in our general music population.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one of the things, too, when I do my performing groups, I try to say to them, okay, let's all work together. And it's amazing when you finally give over the ownership. It's all about, you know, ownership. You give over the ownership to the students, they figure it out really fast. They'll say, no, we need to rehearse over here. We don't need to rehearse right here. They know where they need to rehearse, and it becomes more of a collaborative. And I think that's where even performing groups are going now, where it's going to be a more of a collaborative than the guy on the podium is totally in charge.
Right. And so how does that talk to me a little bit then about how you think that changes your general education music class then?
Oh, I think it dramatically changes it because we're no longer the sage on the stage. We're no longer the one that's going to be like in charge. Our general music class, I mean, a classic, getting this new iPhone has been life-changing for me. I mean, it's now you decide what ring you want different people on. People should be designing their own rings, designer rings. There's an app that has things about that you can do, show music that's sad, music that's happy. I mean, music is such an integral part of our society today, and kids are just thirsting to write their own stuff, their own ringtones, to write their own stuff for their movies, to do all their stuff for that. And we don't offer that. We're allowing librarians to teach these kids to do background music. You know, this should be the general music teacher should be doing this.
Yeah.
You know,
Well,
it
and
should not be the library.
it should be, this is what I want to do. I want to use music to make that ring. And how do I do it?
Right,
Now
right.
we're going to all come in today and we're all going to use the mallet instruments and we're going to
No.
write a little orf. Not that I have a problem with the orf orchestrations because I use them in my classroom, but sometimes you need to get out of the way of what the students want. And I will tell you that from my own experience, that when you open it up and say, okay, what do you guys want to do?
Right.
The first thing they'll do is look at you like, oh, no.
Yeah. Well, you personalize it. I mean, music is all about personalization, you know, and I think that's another thing that I really try to teach my fourth and fifth graders when I first have them is to personalize it. And, you know, and the more you personalize it, the more it means something to them, you know?
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, when you say, what do you want to do? I mean, I have kids all the time that will come and say, oh, Mrs. Prost, you know, I'm working on this project or working on that, and I got to do this and I got to do that. And they're like focused. I mean, they really want, they want to make something different. I mean, it's all about being different. They want something different. They want something unique, and they want to be able to make it creative. And like I said, my students, it's all into composition. Composition is such an integral part. It's a thread through everything. Everything is about creating and making. And, you know, kids want to personalize their life. And the more we get on that as music people, the better. If we all sit down and do the same thing where every kid is doing the same, you know, assignment and doing the same bourdon on the ORF thing, they don't understand the connection. You know, the more we can improvise and do in class, the better I think as music educators we're going to be.
I agree. I agree. And I think it opens your classroom up to a whole different dynamic when the student is leading instead of the teacher being the one
Right.
that plans. But I think as a teacher, it puts you in a very new and interesting position because now it makes it a whole lot more difficult for you to plan a lesson, per se, when you don't know what they're going to ask for when they walk in the door.
Right. Right, right. And sometimes, you know, they may say, you know, we got to work on this, we got to work on that. But, you know, I let them fly. I mean, I let my students fly. They dictate a lot. We, you know, when I say that they're going to have to work on a composition about, you know, today we're going to work on this, some kids will come to me and go, Mrs. Bros, can I do this instead? And I am the yes and teacher. I'll say, yeah, you can do that and let's do this. You know, I push it up a notch. And they're like, oh, I didn't know I could do that.
Right.
So, and then when other kids see it and they can create, but we've lost, I think the bottom line out of all of this is we have lost to be creative as opposed to just reading the notes on the page.
Well, you
some,
know, go ahead.
That's what I think. So a lot of times we've done just the notes on the page and how well we can read the notes as opposed to how well can we make music and be creative.
Right.
And
I think when you stretch into how well can you make music and be creative, that's when you get back to experiencing music as a group again.
Yes.
Because when that child creates that video or that composition, the first thing that they're going to do is pull their buddies over to the computer and say, listen to this. And their buddies are going to comment to them on it. They're going to talk about what they like about it, what they don't like about it. And if you're really like on top of things, you as a teacher will find a way to make it so that you can take that same composition, put it on the web, make it available for a larger audience. And now we're right back to where we were missing before it. You know, like he was talking about at the beginning of that article, where music is a stress reliever, where music is a way to help you to bond with another human being. That it's just that we go about it in a little different fashion now. Because we've moved into a different, you know, way of producing the music to begin with.
Well, and I love the whole idea of the Web 2.0. That has opened up everything because you're not sharing it with 10, 12, 15 people in the classroom. You're sharing it with the world. And that is so powerful. My students, it's like they can't wait to tell their grandmothers, their sisters, their everyone's listening to their music. And they're talking about their music and they're trying to improve their music. And their friends are asking them, well, how did you do that? You know, they hear something, go, oh, that's really cool. How did you do that?
Yeah.
So they're questioning what they hear, which is that's what we want. We want them to question what they hear. We want them to say, oh, my gosh, that was really cool. And how did you do that? I mean, that is the power in it. That's my thing. It's not just burping back the sounds. And I think that back in the Mozart era when he wrote his own stuff, it was the same way. You don't think that those musicians sat there and said, let's try to make music, and they would take what Mozart wrote, and they would enhance it, and he would say this, and they, I mean, there was a lot of give and take. I can't believe that whatever they wrote, that's what they played. I can't believe that. I mean, I think it was collaborative back then, because it was so easy to rewrite and do.
Right.
You know, And so we've moved away from that. We've kept the stuff that's 300 years old, and we're playing the same stuff over and over and over and over again. Not that that's bad, and that has its place. Mm-hmm. But I think in the general population today, you have to offer being creative and composing. And a lot of teachers are nervous about that because they've never composed. They're like, how could I teach this if I've never done this? But, you know, I never could do it, and I do it every day now. I mean, I wrote one song in college, and I think over my first 15 years of teaching, I didn't write any songs. So it wasn't like I was this big-time composer.
Right.
I mean, I got better at it, you know. I've learned how to put it together better. And I've got away from an ABA. I don't do the ABA. I want the kids to come sort of free-form. Because that's what they listen to in movies and their video games. The video games aren't ABA, and certainly the movies aren't. So, you know, they're not listening to just music by itself. They're listening to music as part of a visual.
Right.
So putting visuals together with it and all of that and making it sound good and then having words to it, you know. Very similar to our little toads and goats thing that we did.
Right, with the kindergarten and in your 7th and 8th grader.
Right. You know, it sort of bred together. So,
yeah.
Well, this has been good, Brenda.
Yeah.
It's a good topic. I like this article. I'm so glad I dingoed it.
Okay. So, now, see, next time I think we ought to talk about the wonder of the iTouch and the iPhone.
Right. Because we both have one.
Right.
And it's very, very cool, right?
Right.
Woo! Listen to the next one. We'll probably do that one next.
We'll see when we get that together then.
Okay. Fabulous.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you would like more information on any of the topics we discussed, all the links are on the blog.